Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast. My name is Zachary Mallory, and I am the host of the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast and the founder of the Rise Above Justice Movement. Today, I will give a viewer discretion as advised due to the nature of the topics that we'll be discussing. Today, I am joined by Tara Tang. Tara is an embodiment coach who works in the intersections of spirituality and sexuality. She helps people find their way back to their bodies, overcome shame, heal trauma, and dismantle purity culture in a way that is in alignment with their values and beliefs so that they can build a healthy sexual ethic and thrive in freedom and wholeness. Tara, welcome to the Rise Above Justice Movement podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you today.
Likewise. And, I've been following you on social media for a while, and I've been deeply inspired. Just by the work that you do and
Oh, thank you.
how you do it and you bring people together. So without further ado, feel free to introduce yourself and walk us through your journey, what led you to becoming an embodiment coach, and we'll jump into the topic, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. But let's introduce yourself to our audience and we'll go from there, okay?
Oh, amazing. Okay. Well, as you mentioned, I'm an embodiment coach and somatic practitioner. I work with folks who have felt disconnected from their bodies, who have a lot of trauma in their bodies and are hoping to live their fullest, most authentic, most embodied lives. And my specialty is I work with folks from all different backgrounds, but the primary focus that I work with are folks who are healing religious trauma and purity culture. I myself grew up deep, deep, deep in the church. My dad is and was and still is today a Southern Baptist pastor, if you know, you know. And as a person who is, biracial, mixed, Asian, and I found out later in life in my 30s that I am queer. I was diagnosed when I was 12, 13 years old, and I have a permanent disability, physical disability in my body, recently diagnosed as neurodivergent. And so there's all of these intersections that I grew up with that just were not represented or talked about or given space for at all in any capacity in the very strict religious environment that I was raised in. I grew up in a small town. I love my small town, but there were a lot of restrictions and a lot of challenges to grow up in a deeply evangelical, fundamentalist, evangelical, Southern Baptist kind of environment. I was homeschooled. So there was a lot of isolation that I was raised in, and it was really one way to be a human in the world today, and everything else is wrong. So much policing from within your community that all of a sudden, as a young person growing up developmentally in this kind of like high control religious environment, then you start turning that on yourself. You start wondering what's wrong with me. You start internalizing and digesting shame. You start seeing yourself as they preach in the Bible, like desperately wicked. And that does something to a person. That did such damage and harm to me. And so a lot of the folks that I work with now, we are in our adult years trying to figure out how do we rebuild the pieces of our lives together? How do we see ourselves from a place of wholeness? How do we integrate shame and all of the things that we were taught to feel bad about ourselves? Often growing up, or in the time that we spent in the church or in high control religion, learning how to integrate all of those parts of ourselves so that we can move forward and thrive in freedom and wholeness. So that's the work I do one-to-one with folks as a somatic practitioner. We work with trauma in the body. I help people move through the triggers that they have in their nervous systems because a lot of the time, folks that I work with have deconstructed a lot of this from an intellectual standpoint. We understand in our minds that the things that we were taught in church were really just for power and control, but those teachings still show up in our bodies. Those teachings still show up in our nervous systems. Those teachings still show up in the patterns and behaviors that we have in the way that we move about the world, in our relationships, in our jobs, and the things that we believe about ourselves, the way that we believe about others. And so it's finding a place where we can come back to the body. where we can learn how to listen to the body, where we can tune into our senses without feeling that that's going to lead us on some path to hell, but seeing that the body is good, that the body is wise, and giving ourselves the space to unravel all of the trauma that our body is holding on to so that we can move forward in a way that is healthy, that is safe, that is in alignment with the values and faiths that we live with now today moving forward. And we can start to build forward a world that we really deeply care about, that thrives on freedom and wholeness, not just for ourselves, but for all people. And so that's the work that I'm doing one-to-one with folks now. And then creating community spaces where we can live that out with each other.
You bring such powerful energy to every single aspect of every ounce of work that you
Oh,
do.
thank you.
And I admire your content because the way that you do it, it's like so decolonizing. And I love to see that, which, you brought up like purity culture and like that modern evangelical Christian movement that emphasizes the sexual abstinence before marriage and the strict gender roles and tie it to your virginity. And like there's so many like there's a lot of things to debunk here, right? And let's do a deep dive, into what purity culture looked like for you, what you've seen, what you've experienced. And again, I want to give a viewer discretion as advice due to the nature of the topics going forward from this point in the episode. It can be a bit triggering to some people. Tara is an open book, but
Absolutely.
we will jump right in, my friend, okay?
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, deep dive into what purity culture looked like historically. I mean, this is not anything new. We've seen iterations of this throughout history, truly. But in, modern memory, we really saw a rise of purity culture in the 90s and 2000s as many of us were coming of age. Like, I'm a 80s baby that was raised in the 90s, and now I'm raising my own children now. And so I grew up at the height of like the True Love's Weights movement. I read, Joshua Harris's infamous book, I Kissed Dating Goodbye. I went to Bible camp every single summer that heavily preached abstinence and gave out purity rings. And so this really was just, it was just woven into the thread of evangelical culture in the 90s, 2000s. But beyond that, especially because we've never seen really a separation of church and state, this was woven into the thread of pop culture as a whole across the Western world. We saw people like the Jonas Brothers talking about virginity. We saw that was a really big piece of like Britney Spears and her pop culture rise and fall to fame, right? And so we were talking about sex or not having sex and the value of virginity specifically as a whole culture and society. And it became something that was really weaponized against all people, but specifically those of us who were born and assigned female at birth, like I was. The whole you have to wear a white dress when you get married. And I liken a lot of what we lived with very similar to like the Bridgerton franchise. If you watch that on Netflix, there's this idea that the virtue has to do with the virginity of a young woman. And it's, I literally had parents and mentors and pastors and peers all telling me that the best gift that I could give my future husband, mind you, I was like 11 at the time, but the best gift that I could give my future husband was my virginity, not my intelligence, not my love, not my commitment, devotion, passion, the skills, talents, the things that I care about, the essence of who I am as a person. No, none of that mattered in the grand scheme of things. The most important thing was my virginity. And now looking back on that, I realize how much of that has to do with power and control. And as a society, but especially within the church, the modern day evangelical North American church, but even beyond that, as a society, we are taught this story from so early on. It shows up in fairy tales, it shows up in Disney stories, right? The story of like growing up, finding your love, falling in love, being together forever. And that being together forever is the pinnacle of a successful marriage relationship. And the threat to that is if a woman has knowledge of her body. It's seen as dirty. It's seen as sinful. We hear stories of, oh, she's a nasty woman if she has that bodily autonomy or if she has knowledge of herself. And I work with folks now all the way up from their 20s to their 80s. And so often I'm working with folks who don't have the knowledge of their own bodies because this basic comprehensive body literacy, sex education, and all the above was kept from us. It was kept from us. We were kept in the dark. We were taught that you have to cover your body, cover your shoulders, cover your neck, your collarbone, your legs, your belly button. All of these parts of your body are just so sexual that if a man were to see it, he would stumble into the depths of hell. So in order to take care of him and make sure that he can't control himself, so you have to now control him yourself as someone who is assigned female at birth. And that modesty piece really rose into it. But it was so much more insidious than just you have to cover your shoulders. It put the judgment and the shame also on women for the actions of men. And so that lack of accountability is something that, if we really were to follow that train down, it starts at the beginning of the funnel with something like purity culture and goes all the way down to the rates of sexual violence that we see. And the widespread corruption that we see coming out in the evangelical church everywhere, where unfortunately, and again, gonna reiterate that trigger warning that you so importantly shared at the beginning of this conversation, that the rates of sexual assault, of sexual misconduct, not just for within the greater church community, that's huge already, but for the leadership in the church of community. I'm not the only one to notice scandal after scandal after scandal. And the violence that is done, the harm that is done as a result is widespread because purity culture is grooming for rape culture. If you're not teaching people bodily autonomy, if you're teaching them just to shove it down, push it aside, push it into the shadows, we're not learning healthy sexual ethics. So not only is it doing so much damage on an individual level where we're inducing shame, we're putting judgment where judgment does not belong. We're telling most of the time young women that you have to cover up, that your body is sinful, that your natural human desires that just happen to start to arise during puberty, those are bad and you have to suppress them or else risk eternal damnation in hell. What does that do to a person that we don't get to develop as we're supposed to, natural, normal human development? That has psychological damage. And then on a wider scale, not just the personal scale, on a wider scale, we're not teaching what healthy sexual ethics looks like. We're just telling people to be silent and shove it down and push it into the shadows, wait till marriage, maybe get married far too soon to definitely the wrong person, just so that you don't burn in lust and hell forever. And that just creates an entire problem where sexual violence can now thrive because we never talked about consent. We never talked about accountability. We never talked about mutual flourishing and mutual care. We never talked about the basis of comprehensive sexual education so that we know how to have healthy relationships, so that we know how to have safe relationships. So, purity culture, in the name of upholding a lot of white supremacist, Christian nationalist ideas has come with it a whole host of problems, and so many of us are dealing with the fallout now today.
Absolutely. And, I think what is one way that we can support, purity culture survivors? Because that's a survivor community within the survivor community, because that's something that, has such great trauma around that. What have you seen as an embodiment coach and help others overcome that trauma and, speak out against these, speak out against this? Because it leaves like very deep roots, and it's very deeply rooted in cultures all across the world, especially in like American culture and Canadian culture, and just like in other aspects of the world too. But I've seen it
Absolutely.
very heavily in the United States. You know, I mean, we see it on TV, right? But what have you seen as an embodiment coach, and how have you helped others overcome that trauma?
Yeah, I mean, such a good question. In really practical ways, I'm one thing that one story that's coming to mind is I was working with a client, and we were doing this simple exercise of put your hands on your body. And we started somewhere very innocent. It was just put your arms on your put your hands on your arms. Can you put your hands on your thighs? Like just rest your body and put your hands down on your thighs. And that invitation in and of itself was triggering because the thighs had been so sexualized. You can't wear shorts. You have to cover them up. You have to, from the knee upwards, you have to cover, right? And so these triggers and this trauma shows up in such unexpected places a lot of the time. You're so right when you say the purity culture survivors are a survivor community within a survivor community. And it's one that it's very invisible a lot of the time. The violence is invisible, the trauma is invisible, a lot of it is understood, not understood. And so we start by realizing that this is your body. This is your body. This is your body. And that counteracts the story that I was taught, coming of age in purity culture as a 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old young woman. I'm being told that my body doesn't belong to me. My body belongs to God, and my body belongs to my future husband, a future husband that I didn't even know existed, wouldn't meet. Like it was a it's a whole other adult journey talking about getting married that as a 12, 13, 11-year-old, that's nowhere on my radar yet. And that's nowhere in my world for another decade or two, right? And so you're putting that on a young person saying that your body, like your most basic part of being human, your body doesn't even belong to you. What belongs to you? And the implications of that is that what then happens to you doesn't matter. If violence happens to you, you should pray for your abuser. You just give it to God and let God deal with it. And it's the virtuous thing to just pray for them to come to some sort of accountability. You don't hold them accountable. You just pray for them to be accountable, right? And so it's institutionalizing submission, obedience, lack of autonomy, lack of voice. It's institutionalizing powerlessness so that the hierarchy of power, which is in the church that I was raised in, male headship, patriarchy, white supremacy, although nobody would say that it was white supremacy. All of the actions were white supremacy. I know what it feels like to grow up being, yes, I am mixed race. My mom is white, my dad is Asian, so I'm biracial, but I was one of two non-white families in the community that I grew up in. So I know what it feels like to be othered. I know what it feels like to not feel like you belong. And even now, just in my adult years as being nearly 40 years old, I'm just starting to reconnect back to the culture that I was severed from because of the white supremacy within the church. Nobody that I grew up with would say that they're racist, but absolutely, this funnels down into all of the pieces of the things that we do and how we live out what we believe. And so for so many survivors of purity culture and religious trauma, we're doing this work of the home that we live in. We have to take apart brick by brick and inspect every single piece. Where did I get this belief? How does this belief show up in my life? How does this belief change the way that I view my body, the bodies of other people, the value of other people, the value of myself? And we're inspecting it from all angles, every single brick of the home that we were raised in. And then we're trying to figure out what do I do with the ones that I no longer align with? And what do I do with the ones that I do still align with? Or that I want to reclaim these parts of me that I was told were bad, these parts of me that was told I needed to give to God, these parts of me that I told was told that I need to feel shame over. How do I now reintegrate these and reclaim these pieces of myself into my life so that I can move forward in a way that is honest, that is embodied, that is celebrating the humanity that they tried to strip from me? And so that's a lot of the work that we do. one-on-one with the folks that I work with. And so much of it too is just learning how to reconnect back to my body. Can I notice my senses? Am I safe enough to notice my breath? This is a huge thing for all survivors because we have left our bodies for very legitimate reasons. The trauma that other people may never even know and we may never feel safe to speak of, we have left our bodies for very legitimate reasons. And so coming back into our senses, feeling safe enough to actually live in our body, to notice what things taste like, feel like, smell like, to notice when my body is giving me intuition. When I was literally taught in the church that I can't trust my body, I can't trust my intuition, all of these things are going to lead me astray and I need to beat them into submission, to come back and actually go, oh, my body is wise and my body is good. And that gut feeling that I get when I walk into a room and I can tell that somebody is not good for me, I can actually trust that. And it's not the devil trying to lead me astray. And I don't have to override it with my cognitive abilities, but I can listen to that even if it doesn't make sense, because after the fact, eventually, it always makes sense. And so learning how to listen to the body and live in the body again takes small, intentional, slow movements that move me forward to reclaim safety and self-trust within myself. And that's the work I do with people every day.
And it takes a lot of attention. It takes a lot of practice, to
It does.
really get through to where you're trying to be in your own healing journey. Because we know for a fact that healing is not linear, it's complex. And it looks different for each person. And recognizing that and recognizing the true harm that these norms, we have within our churches and within our communities, it actually does further harm than it does good. Oftentimes I've heard, from other survivors and, leaders within like the ex-evangelical movement, oftentimes purity culture is oftentimes referred to as similar to rape culture. Can you talk about those differences and similarities between rape culture versus purity culture and just kind of like look at those two perspectives and talk about like what they have in common and what they're also different?
I mean, it's such an important parallel to make. Because rape culture and purity culture both ask the question, what did you do to deserve this? Rather than placing accountability on the perpetrator. And from the perspective that I live in now, how can we also ensure that the perpetrator has the healing that they need, as well as the survivor has the healing that they need, right? And so both purity culture and rape culture don't ask those questions. Both purity culture and rape culture are both saying, well, it's your fault. What were you wearing? What place were you in? You invited this. Both purity culture and rape culture are saying, a lot of the time, men have needs. I very rarely hear women have needs, and I very rarely hear men need to be accountable of those needs. And again, I'm using the language of man, and I'm using the language of woman, because the purity culture, as well as rape culture, as well as Christian nationalism and often white supremacy, all prescribe to the gender binary. So I'm using those language th that language and those words by choice, because that in and of itself is another layer of dehumanizing, in and of itself is another layer of silencing, in and of itself is another layer of power and control. And so I want to intentionally highlight that. And that's part of why I'm using that language. I think it does it all of us a disservice when we say that, like, this is femininity and this is masculinity, and those of us who are assigned female at birth only exist within the femininity box, and those of us who are assigned male at birth only exist within the masculinity box, rather than saying that this is a full spectrum of our humanity. Purity culture doesn't do that. White Christian nationalism doesn't do that. Rape culture doesn't do that. It doesn't acknowledge that these are all pieces of who we are as humans. And so many of us have been severed from those different pieces because of the specific boxes that we've been assigned into. So much of the work that I do with my clients is trying to get them out of those boxes that we have been assigned into because of the harm that it does when we flatten our humanity into one single thing. And so I think that those are some of the big pieces of that. And we see men, the amount of sermons that I've sat through that talked about men being aggressors and men being pursuers and men being the one who have to like step up and lead the relationship. And that does so much harm in so many capacities, in so many different areas in the day-to-day of how we live our lives. For one, that's a huge burden for men to handle. And it doesn't give men the place to have their softness for them to be cared for as well too. That's a straight path to burnout and dehumanization because they're not allowed to be multidimensional. They have to be one-dimensional. They have to be strong, right? And likewise for women, if you have to be the one who is always following, if you have to be the one who has to silence her voice, if you have to be the one who says, "Okay, yes, honey, yes, I'll do what you say," and you're the pursuer and you're the aggressor, and in a pattern of restrictive or toxic masculinity, there's so much opportunity for that to turn into control and harm and violence on from sexual violence to domestic violence to coercive control to intimate partner violence, right? There's so many ways that that can be perverted. And on the other side of women have to be just the caretakers and the nurturers and this very soft femininity that we see preached in purity culture, but then perpetuated also in rape culture, that women have to just be passive and not own their sexuality. And a woman who does own her sexuality, who celebrates her sexuality, or simply knows how to care for herself as a sexual being, then she must be a Jezebel, then she must be a harlot. Then again, the blame gets put back on her again. And then there's just no accountability for harm that is being done. Not saying that only those who are assigned male at birth are doing harm. Absolutely, it goes both ways. Every single human being has the capacity to do harm, and every single human being also has the ca capacity for healing and accountability. But the problem with both purity culture and rape culture is that we don't look at that. We don't look at the spectrum of humanity. We put people in boxes, and that boxes, those restrictive boxes, cause a lot of problems.
And oftentimes more problems than we know what to deal with too. And
Yeah,
that's
because there's
such
no
a,
blueprint of how we move forward healing in a healing capacity for most of us.
because it's so incredibly complex and it's not linear,
It's
and
not linear.
oftentimes people are asked, well, why didn't you leave? You
Oh,
said it
man.
earlier, and making like seeing those similarities and the differences, but it seems to be more similarities than there are differences. I mean, let's be real here. And I think you hit on a really, really deep subject. And I could see future episodes in our future too, because there's a lot more deep dive that we can go into this, and a lot of the deconstruction and the destruction of what it's had on communities like all across the world. And thinking about that, what do you see? What's the best way to phrase this? What do you see right now with the rise of nationalism? You see the rise of just this evangelical culture just continues to rear its head back into our society, right? And ultimately, it's always been there. It just kind of went a little unnoticed, and it wasn't as like predominant, right? But now we're starting to see it come back around. What are you seeing right now?
Oh my gosh. There's so much that can be said on that.
Oh,
I
yes.
so much. I think that this is such an important conversation of the rise of Christian nationalism. You're so right that it's always been there. The stuff that I'm hearing people say out loud now is the same stuff that I was hearing people say quietly as I was a child, right? This, like, we need to secure our borders, anti-immigration rhetoric, because there's more of them than there is us. And the us that they're not always naming, but they're starting to name now, is this white evangelical, like, as American as apple pie, kind of story, kind of, the good old days of the USA and the homecoming queen and the quarterback on the football team, right? Like that fantasy is so rooted in Christian nationalism, and it's so limiting for what North America actually really looks like. And Turtle Island, let's call it by its actual name, what Turtle Island actually looks like, which is what is known now by colonial North America, right? And so this isn't anything new. This is something that has been around forever. There's this idea that if we don't have strong borders, then too many immigrants will come in, and they're not from the countries that we want them. I'm doing air quotes right now that nobody can see. They're not from the countries that we want them to be in, because they're coming from places like Latin America, they're coming from Mexico, they're coming from a lot of Asians are currently being deported by ICE. We're not always talking about that because we're talking so much about and in solidarity with those who are coming up from Latin American countries, from Central and South America. And it is important to talk about the prejudice against our Hispanic brothers and sisters and non-binary friends. Also, it's coming from all around the world, right? And the problem with this is that from a white Christian nationalist perspective, is that if we have immigration, a lot of people who are white Christian nationalists are saying that it's watering down that, like, what it means to be American. Because in their mind, what it means to be American, and we're seeing this also up here in Canada, what it means to be Canadian is to be white. So I hear all the time people complaining that when they go to Tim Hortons in Canada and they get their coffee, it's always coming from a South Asian person. There's never, there's too many South Asian people that mo have moved into our building. There's too many South Asian people that have moved into our neighborhood. So it's the same rhetoric, and it's the same idea that to be a person in North America is to be white, is to be Christian, evangelical, is to be, this all American person. And it's incredibly harmful. It's dehumanizing, and it's just not true. Like the statistics are that it's just not true. Immigrants make our communities better. Immigrants make our food better. They make our culture better. They make our music better. They bring beautiful fashion sense. Like there's so much richness and beauty. And yes, I may be biased because, like, my dad is an immigrant from Singapore, immigrated to Canada in the 70s, but I get a firsthand experience of what that looks like when you integrate that into your community and you integrate that into your family and you integrate that into your being. It's a beautiful, spectacular thing. And so this anti-immigration rhetoric that is coming up of we need to secure our borders, we need to have they need to come and immigrate through the proper channels. I mean, truly, the audacity for a settler colonial nation to have such rhetoric is just beyond me to begin with. But beyond that, it's coming down to white Christian nationalism, white Christian nationalism, when really they don't want a democracy, they want a theocracy. They want one nation under God, and they mean it. They want the government to be a Christian nation. They want to be reciting the Ten Commandments in church and in schools. They want prayer in schools. They want everyone to be bending the knee. And it is wild to me that they will talk the way that they talk about other countries around the world and send missionaries into other countries around the world for doing the exact same thing that they're trying to establish in North America now today. Don't mix it up. There is no separation of church and state. There never has been, but there absolutely is not today. And we're just saying the quiet part out loud. That's why we want That's why the government now is pushing women to have more babies so that white babies can outnumber all of the immigrant babies that are coming in now, so that we can move North America to look a certain way because they fear that it has gone too far in the opposite direction. They want to take away birth control and bodily autonomy. They want to take away same-sex marriage because they want to have a Christian, nuclear household that has a father and a mother and 4 to 5 children. And that's the way that they think that they're going to take back culture. Again, I'm doing air quotes so you can't see, but take back culture because they think that it's gone too far in the other direction. That now we have interracial marriages, which I am a product of. We have queer people living loud and proud because they finally, for the first time in any generation, feel safe enough to be their own authentic selves, which again, I am a queer person as well too, right? Like there's too, it's gone too much and it's gone too far. I hear too many people say that. It's gone too far. We need to bring it back. We need to get back to our white Christian roots from the good old days when there was no representation, when only white folks had power, when only white folks had voice, when only white folks had any kind of rights, representation, or autonomy. And the current administration is unapologetically trying to go back to that. And it's terrifying and it's unsafe. And I would dare go, and I will say this with my full chest, it is not Jesus in any capacity. It is not Jesus. Jesus was a brown Jewish man who lived in Palestine. He was himself an immigrant. And the people who made up the start of the early church that were closest to him when he was doing his ministry, they were primarily women. The first convert was a queer person, right? And so you have the actual life and teaching of Jesus living in direct opposition of what the white evangelical Christian nationalist movement that is responsible for most people's religious trauma and purity culture trauma and racism, that right there is in direct opposition to who Jesus actually was and the life that he actually lived. And so for many of us who are part of the ex-evangelical movement who have recognized this harm and who have walked away from it, it's very hard for us to live in a world where we left that behind. We've done the deconstruction on that. We're trying to move forward. And then we're watching the government bring us all right back to where we started.
The number one rebuttal to purity culture is teaching about comprehensive sex education, where it talks about the sex, the pleasure, and the body in a healthy and accurate way, and does not promote the abstinence only. I mean, let's be real, we're talking about teenagers. I know what it
Oh,
was
yeah.
like for me, like sitting there listening to my teacher talk about, oh, well, you're supposed to save yourself until you are married, and I'm sitting here like, majority of people in this classroom, you should see what they talk about in the locker rooms. You should see what they talk about at the parties that we go to. You should see what they talk about behind, backstage at our dress rehearsals for our plays. Have you
Totally.
seen what these people do?
Yeah,
And you want
totally.
to sit here and talk about, oh, well, we need to make sure we, practice this and practice that. Let's be real. Let's call it exactly what it is. That birds and bees bullshit is not going to fly anymore. It's
No.
not. And you need to call it directly what it is. It needs to start young. And it
Yeah.
starts at home. If they're not going to learn it at school, they're not going to learn it at home. They're gonna get curious. They're gonna
Absolutely.
learn about it on television, or they're gonna learn about it on, God forbid, social media.
Totally. Yeah, no, absolutely.
But that shame and the guilt that comes with purity culture is so deeply rooted within religion, and that the sexual shame and the, leading to the difficulty with the dysfunction, the pain with the sexual desire, like there's so much that goes into that. And the process, essentially you establish your own values. And this goes into like the deconstruction and the healing aspect, but also the decolonization
Yeah.
of all of it, right? Because
Yes.
we are so ingrained in colonization, is so beyond insane. And we're in 2025 and it's still, we're still having these conversations. And you said it earlier, like, these are the conversations that we need to be having. But whenever these conversations are silenced because they want us to stay silent about these topics, it makes it really hard for people to seek support. You know,
It
finding that
does.
support system and, you know, the support groups and, you know, people that celebrate who you are, your experiences, and those people that validate your journey, you know. So, and the harmful messaging also that goes into like purity culture too, like the harmful messaging that goes into that. And, you know, it's deeply rooted and deeply ingrained in the trauma aspect.
Yeah, it
So,
is.
walk us through a little more about what you've seen with like the prioritizing the patience and the self-compassion that you have in order to help others get to that same stage of healing. You know, what is something that you share very often that you've seen as a common practice amongst other survivors? Like, is there something in common that works for the most amount of people that you work with? Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. I mean, again, to your point, the healing isn't linear and everyone's journey looks different, right? So if you're a person who's listening to this and maybe you're looking for support, you're looking for answers, you're saying, like, yes, I have religious trauma, I have purity culture trauma, I don't know how to move through it, and I need support, I'm looking for answers. I want to say to you specifically that your journey can look different than other people's journey. And to give yourself the compassion and the gentleness and the slowness. And I want to really highlight that slowness because one of the things that I see happening most often is a client will come to me and they'll say, "How long will this take?" And, you know, I'll be very transparent that sometimes I have people who will work with me. We always start with, like, I recommend let's start working together for the first 3 months and let's constantly reevaluate and we're constantly checking in. And we're building that as a skill intentionally because we never learned critical thinking skills when we grew up in high control religion. We were taught to listen and obey to those who were in authority over us. We weren't taught to question. And so what I do intentionally is we're working with folks every 3 months or so, and we check in what's working, what's not working. And sometimes folks come to me, and at the 3 month mark, they're like, "This has been amazing. I have gotten what I needed to get out of this, what I came here to work on. And I feel like I can trust myself enough to go on my own a little bit and fly on my own, knowing that I can always come back if I need to." Great. I love that for them. And sometimes people get, 3 months, 6 months, a year, and they're like, "I'm still discovering so much about myself. I'm uncovering layer after layer of healing and self-trust and owning my own autonomy and embracing my sexual liberation without shame and all of these things." And we just keep working together. Great. I love that for you too. Everybody's journey looks differently, is what I'm trying to say. And the timeline that it takes is different for everybody, but the slowness is one really important piece. And I think those of us who do work in therapeutic healing spaces, there's often this, it's easy for us to fall into the idea of, "I am doing my healing because I'm trying to fix myself." There's this goal that we're trying to get into. And this is a very colonial mindset. And it comes from the way that we value our worth in accordance with our productivity. And I really want to challenge everybody to reconsider that mentality, that healing doesn't have to be productive. It can be slow and it can come in the most unexpected ways. And when we learn to, instead of trying to fix myself and fix my body, I then just try to be with myself and be with my body. And notice how that perspective shift changes things. All of a sudden, I'm turning my own body and my own self out of a project, and I'm allowing myself to be a person again. I'm allowing my body to be a person again. And so if we come at it from that perspective, that's so wildly different. If I can start and I can slow down, and I work with a lot of clients. The majority of my clients are assigned female at birth. I do work with folks that are assigned male at birth. I work with non-binary folks. I work with trans folks as well too. But the majority of the folks that I work with historically have been assigned female at birth because I was also assigned female at birth. So there's a relatability that we share with one another. And a lot of the folks who grew up in purity culture, we have developed different ways of coping and being. That can look like a variety of different things for everybody. But one thing that I do see a huge rise in, and statistically this is true, that those of us who grew up in high control religion and often purity culture see higher rates of dysfunctions like vaginismus is one huge one, right? And so vaginismus is the involuntary pain for any time that there is insertion or touch anywhere on the in the vagina. Vulvodynia is anywhere on the outside of the body, on the vulva. And so I work with a lot of folks who come to me because sex is painful. And maybe they're in an amazing relationship now. Maybe they're committed and they're married and there's no fear of shame or judgment, but the old programming of purity culture still shows up. Or maybe they aren't in a committed relationship, but they've done a lot of the deconstruction work and they're wanting to be able to move forward and celebrate their sexual debut or just have a beautiful sexual relationship with who is now their partner. Or maybe they just want to go and have some casual sex and some great one-night stands with dignity and safety and honoring themselves and honoring the partners that they're engaging with. Great, we love that for them. But how do we then get past the hurdle of all of the trauma or the dysfunctions or the diagnoses that came as a result of the coping strategies that developed while I was still actively in high control religion or purity culture? And so, for example, one of those examples is like vaginismus. And so, rather than trying to fix the problem or fix my body, can I be with my body? Can I be with myself? And so, one very simple practice that I love to lead my clients through that can apply to a condition such as this is, can you put your hand on your body? Can you cup the outside of your body? So, in this case, I'm going to use the proper anatomy and I'm going to say, can you cup the outside of your body, your genitals? If you're assigned female at birth and you have a vulva, can you cup that part of your body, your vulva, from the outside? And can you breathe into your hand? That you let your body, your muscles slowly, one by one, relax. You let your body melt into the warmth of your hand and you start to reclaim safety. And we do this as slow as we need to and as many times as we need to till your nervous system gets the signal that it is safe enough to be with us now, which is profound. So profound. When every message that you have ever received from film, from music, from Christian influencers, from Christian mentors, from pastors, from parents, from peers, every single message you have received along the way is that your body is not safe, that you can't be with your body, that you can't trust your body, that you can't touch your body, that you can't live in your body. So a simple practice, simply as can I put my hands on my body and breathe with it and allow the muscles to relax and bring presence back into this moment, doesn't matter what your anatomy is, doesn't matter what your sex was assigned at birth, doesn't matter who you are. This is a super powerful somatic practice to reclaim embodiment and signal safety now to my nervous system again. And exercises like that and work like that starts to then build the foundation of everything else that we can build upon it as we start to rebuild a healthy sexual ethic and values for the first time.
Wow, I'm speechless because this is so incredibly healing, also listening to you, because I've been like my own like religious trauma, and I'm a survivor of sexual assault and domestic violence, and hearing you do this is such a healing aspect. And I know a lot of others are going to resonate very deeply with everything that you're saying, everything that you're doing. And I just want to say thank you, first of all, for coming onto the podcast today, but also giving us this like history lesson that they don't teach you, right? And
Totally.
this is that educational piece. I sat down and talked with a lot of like leaders in like the sex ed space, and I have some episodes coming up here fairly soon that talk about what sex ed should really look like and what we should actually be learning.
Absolutely.
So I think it's incredible. Keep doing
Oh,
the work
thank
that
you.
you're doing. And is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience today? I know we're going to wrap up here in just a few, but is there anything else that you would like to share?
Oh man, I mean, I'm just so thankful that places like this exist. Thank you so much for creating this kind of a space where you're having these really important conversations that are not widely being had, and to give people, often survivors, I mean, I know that your community is primarily survivors, and to give survivors the space to get this kind of information, but also to see that hope is possible. And I really hope that that's what people are leaving this conversation with today. I want them to feel everything that I do in my work is, yes, looking at the dynamics of power and control in our world, but more than anything, my goal is to help people feel less alone. And so, if we have accomplished that today with our conversation, we've done the work that we set out to do. I want people to feel less alone. I want the people to find hope. Hope is what sustains us in the midst of days like this. Hope is what sustains us in the midst of our healing work, but also in the midst of our activist work. And both things go hand in hand. We don't have individual personal liberation without collective liberation. All of these things are intertwined. And so, I'm so grateful for the space that you have so beautifully created and that you have invited us into. And I really hope that those of us who are listening today, that that spark of hope you will carry with you as you continue to move forward. Get curious about what your body is holding on to you. Get curious of the wisdom that your body wants to share with you. Get curious of all of the ways that not only in your own lived experience and your personal life you have been severed from your humanity, but how has our culture and a society and the policies that we interact with on a day-to-day basis severed us from our humanity, and how do we get back to that? Because that's the piece where we reclaim our embodiment, is when we reclaim our humanity. When you see yourself as human again, when you see your body as human again, and you see each other as human again, that the humanity in me recognizes the humanity in you, and that's the way we move forward together.
Absolutely. You said a key word. That's how we move forward. Key word is forward
Forward.
together as
Yes.
survivors, as advocates. Again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I greatly appreciate you beyond belief. You know that. And I look forward to future collaborations because this is one of many conversations that we can have and do these deep dives into these conversations. And this doesn't even go to like scratch on the surface because there's
Oh,
so
yeah.
much more
We
to
could go
hear.
so much deeper, and I'm sure we will. So, yeah, thank you. The appreciation is so mutual.
Absolutely. You take care of yourself, okay? Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Talk soon. Bye.
Thank you.